Welcome to the Anime That Didn't Make Us, a podcast about anime that we could have been nostalgic for if not for the curse of geography. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Anthony Askew.
And tonight we are joined by Gary Hedges.
Hello.
Hello, Gary. Let me just nip over into Twitter and let people know that we are streaming.
Okay. Are you on the old Xbox right now, Gary? Is that what you're...
Yeah, running Skype on the Xbox. I even got a Skype pop-up in-game to say I was being phoned by Brian to so get off Fantasy Star.
Well, I mean, I may be a clue to the quality of how your computer was feeling. You sound better through the Xbox than you did through the computer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the PC is, as I say, it's on its way out now. I can't even boot to desktop. It's not good.
So our choices for this week's episode are Anmitsu Hime is my choice. Gary's choice is Transformers Super God Master Force. And Anthony's choice is Brave of Gold Goldran. And we're going to start... as always, with my pick, because I'm still the oldest.
still.
Anmitsu Hime. Right, let me just get my PowerPoint for the people who are watching along at home. I did share the PowerPoint if you want to follow along, you guys, on the old Google Drive.
I'm in it on the stream, I'm in it on the Google Drive, I'm everywhere.
So, Anmitsu Hime, Master Force, and Goldran. So, starting with Anmitsu Hime, first published in 1949. Anmitsu Hime is a comic by Shusuke Kurakane. In 1954, after the comic had ended, a live-action film adaptation starring Izumi Yukimura was released. And that was followed by a second film 2 weeks later. Bang! Imagine if your Marvel films came out like that.
Wow, yeah, God. 2 weeks. Nice. Almost 10 years.
Then, in 1958, there was a 100-episode live-action TV show starring Maseo Nakahara. And there was another live-action movie adaptation, which was released in 1960, starring Haruko Wanibuchi. And... then in the 80s, there was an Anmitsu Hime revival. We had a 1983 TV film with Kyoko Kazume in the lead role. When I wrote that down, I was like, where do I know that name from? It's quite the name of the heroine from the future part of 20th Century Boys is a pun on her name.
Oh, really?
The schoolgirl who gets involved, dragged into the story. And another two TV films followed that one. Then in 1986, there was a new gag manga based on the property by Izumi Takemoto and the anime adaptation that we're going to talk about today. It's worth noting, because I was like, my mind went, oh, surely one's an adaptation of the other. But no, apparently the comic and the animation have no relation other than they're both based on the original 1949 comic. But then neither of them are adapting each other. And so, yes, the anime aired on Fuji TV, and it was produced by Studio Pierrot and ran for the entire year for 51 episodes. And it follows the adventures of the 11-year-old tomboy princess, Anmitsu, and her very European tutor, Miss Castella of the Pudding Kingdom. But that's not all. In 2008, it returned for a live-action TV movie starring Mao Inoue, and that had a sequel the following year. I think they were like New Year's specials starting around like the first week of the new year. So, yeah, that's what we've got.
It's quite famous, isn't it, really? I think if we were doing the famous anime again, this would make the cut.
I think it would, but I'm not sure whether the anime is the thing anyone remembers, though. That's the problem. It may be a famous property, because I think a lot of the actresses who've played the character in the live action have gone on to notable careers, not necessarily acting, but notable careers in acting and singing. So, this aired on October the 5th, 1986, the first episode did, but what was I watching? I would have been 11 years old at this point, so the same age as the titular character. How about you, Gary? How old were you, October 5th, 1986?
I would have been 5.
And Anthony?
I'm not here.
Not here yet. You're always late. So it's a Sunday, so BBC One, not much on except in the evening, that I would have watched Ever-Decreasing Circles, the sitcom with Penelope Wilton, Peter Egan, is that his name, and Richard Briers. Really depressing sitcom. Another one of these Larby Esmond sitcoms, which are just super depressing, and I enjoyed it at the time. But I think it was as their career went on, I slowly realised how depressing their sitcoms were. Until they got to the one where Carl Hallman's playing the son of death, waiting for an old lady to die in Mulberry.
Okay. So is this about people dying as well?
No, this is about a terrible... So Richard Briers' character is incredibly fussy and tries to organise everything, and he doesn't care for this new guy who's moved into their cul-de-sac, the Peter Egan. And so there's like this romantic friction between his wife and this new guy and him. It's full of infuriating characters, and their best friends are this couple who dress alike constantly. That's the joke. Harold and Hilda, I think they're called.
I can see them. I found a picture of those two.
Yeah, if you look for pictures of this sitcom, you get more pictures of them than the actual main three characters. Because that's the thing.
Well, they look lighthearted.
They are lighthearted, yes. Because while everyone else is losing their mind, they're perfectly happy, and that drives all the other characters even worse, because they can't deal with these Pollyannas who work their way into their stories. Then that was followed by Howard's Way, which I think my parents watched. I did not watch. I don't care for boats. And this was like an attempt to do a Dallas or Dynasty in the UK.
On boats.
I think they've done this already with Triangle. I think that was another early example.
Looks very American. If you'd have said this to Matt, I wouldn't have questioned it.
I think it's like Southampton or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't have twigged it was...
The fashion, okay. Like the hair, it seems very...
Trying to be American then,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Nobody looks like that in the UK.
Not even the guy wearing
the football top.
Yeah, not even in 1985.
set in the fictional town of Tarrant.
Tarrant?
On the south coast of England, but produced by BBC Birmingham. And then the other thing you had on that night that I would have probably seen was Only Fools and Horses. This episode is called... I know the fella in the screenshot I'm showing, the Twitch stream, I know that's a wig that he's wearing. I think that's the final reveal, is the wig comes off on this... as a visual representation on the lies that he's telling Del. It's called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? To go or not to go, that is Del's dilemma.
He looks a bit like Lee Francis, him. On the right.
Nick Stringer playing Jumbo Mills.
Mm.
I can't remember the plot. Is he like trying to get him to come to Spain or something? I don't know. What I may have watched more of was over ITV in the morning. Because, first of all, we had something called Are You Awake Yet? Which I could not remember until I looked it up, which was for really little kids with Michaela Strachan and a giant teddy bear.
Sounds familiar.
Tough Ted, I think the teddy bear was... I think it was based on some storybooks of the time. But that was followed by The Wide Awake Club, which I definitely would have watched.
Yes.
With Tommy Boyd and assorted other sidekicks. And that was followed by a cartoon I had not thought about for however many years it's been. Aubrey.
Never heard of it, and I don't think I've ever seen that character.
I've seen it. My memories of it are extremely vague.
I was the same.
Five in 1986 at the time?
Yeah, I was the same even with being 11 at the time. But I knew the name, and then I saw the face. I was like, that rings a bell. And then I watched the cartoon, and I was like, oh, this vaguely rings a bell. They're like shorts, silent shorts of Aubrey inventing something. Quite often a thing which already exists, but...
Yeah, the imagery style reminds me of Stop It and Tidy Up.
Yeah, the animation's a lot better than Stop It and Tidy Up. The animation's quite good from the episodes I watched on YouTube. Then there was an episode of the 1982 The Incredible Hulk cartoon. Oh, I don't know whether it was this one. It lives, it grows, it destroys. I remember having fond memories of this. I can't remember if this is on Disney Plus or not. I don't think it is. I think the 90s one is. I know this used to
be. You can get that one on Amazon Prime, though, apparently.
Is that right? I know it used to be on Netflix.
I know. False alarm. Wrong thing.
That cartoon was how, like, the Incredible Hulk became one of, like, pretty much he was my favourite Marvel character. Like, even before I got big into Spider-Man, I was big into Incredible Hulk off the back of this.
And then the evening, you had such things as Bullseye.
Apparently, I used to sit and watch that with my parents.
I think I sat and watched that with my grandparents. and then Live at the Piccadilly, which...
A variety show, yeah.
I'm sure I...
Can't be a good variety show.
Let me link to this Times page and I'll see if it tells me who was on it. I think it did. Now, of course, you may not have been able to see The Incredible Hulk, because I think The Incredible Hulk was a central TV variation, Gary.
Ooh.
So you may have had... do you get ITV London in your area?
Oh, hang on, no, we did used to get... Because Central's the one with the big circular globe.
It is, yeah.
A quarter of it is... we used to get that.
I used to get that, okay. Excellent, there you go then. You would have got to see The Hulk as well. So Live from the Piccadilly... it was a variety show introduced by Jimmy Tarbuck. Among those on tonight's bill are Neil Sedaka, Phyllis Diller, Brian Connolly. This must be very early Brian Connolly on ITV. Mm. Dave Evans and Peter Piper. Well, I know the first three. I have no idea who Dave Evans and Peter... Well, Dave Evans rings a bell as well, so I don't really know who Peter Piper is. I assume he may have a peck of pickled peppers. and then in the evening, this was a thing I probably would not have been allowed to watch, but I would have been very much aware of, Spitting Image.
Never got away with Spitting Image. Then quite creepy looking.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the point. When was the chicken?
I know, but as a kid,
I feel like the chicken song was around this time.
I was aware of the chicken song, and I was aware of Spitting Image, but it was absolutely not something I was allowed to watch. I mean, I'm pretty sure, looking at that still on the presentation where it says 7:45, I'm pretty sure 7:45, me as a five-year-old, would have been tucked up in bed.
Yeah. Spitting Image, chicken song was earlier in the year, so yeah, because I definitely remember... That would have been the only bit of Spit Image I would have been allowed to see because it was on Top of the Pops and on the radio. But I think you were aware of it because people at school had older brothers who were allowed to watch it, or that maybe they were allowed to watch it.
It was the thing that was talked about it was that whole, you knew what it was, but you couldn't watch it.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if I was allowed to watch it because I'm like the youngest in my year at school at this point. So this is my first year at secondary school. I'm already at secondary school when this is coming out. Like 3 weeks at secondary school. So maybe I would have been allowed to watch Spitting Image at this point. I'm sure I did watch it eventually, but I probably wasn't watching it here. And I've forgotten to put the picture in for the... I may have also failed to look at what the number one was for my pick. I've done it for the other two.
Have a guess first. Have a guess.
I cannot possibly have a guess. I'm no. This is not in my music buying era, so it's normally a surprise to me as well. So we
presumably looking... not the chicken song.
No, because that was April. Because that makes sense. Because I remember people singing that. I'm trying to learn the words from listening to it to gain primary school final year creds.
Oh, you do have the what's number one in the notes.
No. That's from last time. That's from the last episode we did.
Oh, false alarm.
That's what I'm saying. Because why would I put the US number one in for this one? We haven't got anybody from America with us. Okay, the date is... I'm doing this on the fly now. October the 5th. Got all the episode titles this time. Because that's much more important. True Blue by Madonna. Again.
That's been a one. Yeah, I was going to say. And I still can't remember it. And then I hear a little bit and I'm like, oh yeah, that one.
I had to think for a second. And I was like, how does the chorus go? And then suddenly it popped into the head. And I was like, oh yep, no, I have heard it.
I might have some rogue slides as well, because the slide I thought was next is not next. Anyway, episode one of this is The Princess Loves Birthdays. It's directed by Masami Anno, who also directed Miss Machiko from around this time. Unlike this, you can watch Miss Machiko. It's on Crunchyroll. The screenplay is by Yoshio Urasawa, who we just encountered on the last episode, because they were the screenwriters of Ipanema. But we also know them from Fushigi Yugi, because we've done that on.
Not so good.
Yes. Also wrote Bobobo, Bobobo, and Nintama Rantaro, I think, is probably the most famous show they're associated with, which is one of those shows which is massively famous in Japan, and I don't think there's a sausage of it in English. Character design is by Kuji Nanke, you may know from the openings for Ranma and Urusei Yatsura, but also did the character designs for the Mrs. Pepper Pot anime, which I think is a possible choice for me at some point in the future. And it stars Mami Koyama as Anmitsu Hime, who you may know as the voice of Lunch in Dragon Ball, as Ryoko Mendao in Urusei Yatsura, or currently Big Mom in One Piece. We've got Nana Aoki as Mrs. Castilla, and she played Yoko in Magical Star Magical Emmy, and that is all she did in anime, this and that. And maybe
She didn't like remain within like the showbiz.
I don't think so. No, I don't think there's a wiki. Oh. I don't think there's a Wikipedia page for her either. So. Joji Yanami is playing Hiko Zaimon Abikawa, which I believe is the that's the
guy with the tash.
That is the guy with the tash, the chief retainer.
What a great character!
He is the voice of King Kai in Dragon Ball and Ganfall in One Piece. Another guy with a massive mustache who also lives in the sky and is kind of a god. I was like, suddenly dawned on me. Oh, that's why he was cast as that, because of King Kai. and Riko Suzuki as Court Lady Ohagi, the voice of Megabar in Deno Coil, Miss Bakin in One Piece, Enya in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and most old women, it turns out. You look at her cast list on the Anime News Network, and it's like, old woman, granny. But from when she was quite young, she was doing these voice roles. And there's a apparently there's some sort of advert which people have turned into a meme on Nikko Video of her dressed as a witch. So I need to investigate that further. The opening theme is Koe wa Kuesushon by O Nyanko Club, and ending theme is Anmitsu Dai Sukusen by O Nyanko Club. Debuting in 1985, this group of high school girls had 52 members over the 2.5 years they were a going concern.
52?
We've encountered subgroups of the act back when we covered High School Kim and Gumi. So, The Princess Loves Birthdays, episode one. We open with a quick recap of the 10 years of Anmitsu's life so far, from birth to being 10. And then go into our absolutely cracking opening, both animation and song-wise. And then we return to the present day, or at least their Anmitsu's present day, where a firework goes off and there's an announcement with a big banner and also over the PA system that it's the princess's birthday today, and as such, it's going to be a national holiday. So everyone stop what they're doing and go and enjoy and celebrate her birthday. And so we get a sequence of people following these orders. We get a bunch of firemen who decide to quit putting out a fire mid-fire. We've got the school, the class running out, but then the teacher runs past the kids because he's even more eager to get out of school than the kids are. We've got a waitress clearing up people's plates before they finish their meal. And then the best one, I think, well, maybe not. I think the fireman might be the best one, but it ends with a barber kicking a patron out with only half their hair cut.
I did like that sequence.
And then we see that Anmitsu has tied up this young boy called Manju in order so that she can use the PA to make this announcement. Then we see the preparation for the party, and a Yami type appears. This guy's called Tanosuke. He's original to the anime. He's not in the original comic.
Is that the dude? He's the skinny, whiny guy.
He's the skinny guy with a slight buck tooth and the blue lol head on his cheek. Yes, and
he's good as well.
He's good as well. Like yes, him. Yes. He's Shigeru Chiba. I recognize the voice immediately. I feel like a lot of '80s shows were like, well, we. There isn't a role for Shigeru Chiba in this story, so let's make him a role. the chief retainer is trying to make Tanosuke save money, not spend so much money on this party. Then a massive present arrives, which disgusts the chief retainer and makes all the boys ashamed of the small presents they've bought Anmitsu. And this present is from her parents, and they've ordered it in from Europe. And it is Miss Castella, her tutor from the Pudding Kingdom. And she emerges with an umbrella and then gives a kiss on the cheek to everyone. That's how European she is. She kisses people on the cheek. Which, Dad, is awful. I do like the parents are just basically your mum and dad if they happened to be the emperor of a kingdom. There's like no, they just behave like mums and dads. Then Mr. Castella points out there's plenty of time before the party, so why not, like, start studying, because she's your tutor. And Anmitsu wants none of this, so does the, hey, what's that over there trick. Everyone looks over there, and she legs it. And Miss Castella chases after her, which causes a whole load of disasters. There's a cake disaster. As they spin the old lady round, causing her to drop the birthday cake. They send a bunch of apples flying, which Tanosuke ends up on top of the apples, rolling through a whole bunch of tables in a great bit of animation. And then he ends up in the river. And then he thinks he's safe, but oh no, the women have got into boats now and are chasing each other in boats. So he gets hit by two boats as well. She gets outside the castle walls and hides behind this guy called Senbei, who's a guy who's kind of like simultaneously built like Popeye and Bluto at the same time. But Senbei is a traitor after Miss Castella explains what's going on and hands her back over to Miss Castella, and basically in the hopes that Miss Castella will be able to turn her into a good princess and not a trouble causer. And Miss Castella sings thanks. So I assume there's like a bit of... in this interpretation, a bit of Maria from The Sound of Music to how they're approaching her. And we check back in on the parents. Dad's playing golf. Mum's doing bonsai. The retainer and the old lady are not happy. They want them to get rid of this European woman they've brought into the kingdom. Meanwhile, Miss Castell's trying to figure out exactly what... and Mitsuo likes to do. They run through all the usual subjects. She's not interested in them. So what do you want to do? And she's like, I'd like to draw. So let's go and do that. And so they go outside and start graffitiing all over the castle. Which leads to more disasters as people panic that they're in danger. But they don't. They're only in danger because of how they try and get them down from there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they basically saw the scaffolding they're standing on, like, foot by foot down.
They're trying to kill them.
Yes. so Mitsuo gets mad and gets the fireman to clean the castle off and ends up getting soaked. And the old lady and the retainer, like, try and guilt trip Miss Costello into leaving, so she does. But then Misahime chases after her and convinces her to stay.
And it's a really nice moment, that.
It is. And they have the party, and Miss Costello is unpacking something else, and it's her hang glider. And Misahime wants to go. And Miss Costello says, oh, it takes a lot of training, but it's too late. She's already flying over the party, and everyone's absolutely amazed at the hang glider. And that will set us off for another adventure in the next episode, which seems to be an Indiana Jones in Spearhead episode. And as we learnt on Twitter, this was the first time Anthony learnt that hand glider is not hand glider.
I've always thought it was. And I still had to, cause I've got it in my notes, and I had to look down to remember that it wasn't the other one. So, yeah, I always thought it was hand glider, not hang glider.
Yeah. So,
it's not a word I say often, so...
No, this is unfortunately the only episode fan-subbed, which is annoying because this is one of the favourite things I've watched for the that didn't make us so far.
Yeah, I got big Brian vibes from this, and even like I even enjoyed it. I was like, oh, if I'm enjoying it at this amount, Brian's going to be loving it.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to enjoy it, but I actually did quite like it. I thought it was quite funny. I particularly liked the chase scene, and it reminded me of a lot of shows that I watched growing up that had those like chaotic chase scenes where so many innocent bystanders fall foul of it. And I absolutely love that.
Yeah, I think this is the golden age for TV anime having chase scenes. I think eventually it became probably too prohibitive in terms of scheduling to put together those scenes, because this is these sort of chase scenes are like a big calling card of the Studio Pierrot Eurosite Zero episodes as well. Yeah, and obviously it shares some staff, and yeah, it's right up my street, as you say, Anthony. But I think there's another show which is the episode with the two best things we've watched for the anime that didn't make us.
Oh, so I've never thought of it like that, but there's another good. There's.
But yeah, if you can find it, watch it. You may struggle to find it at this point, because I looked for it again and I was like, oh, I'm quite pleased I downloaded this many, many moons ago. Because yeah, it's a struggle to find in English the one episode there is. But who knows? Maybe someone will pick it up down the line.
Maybe it'll get a remake.
Maybe that Retro Crush site will be popular enough that they have to find more things to license. Rightio. Next up is Transformers Super God Master Force. Now, this you can get hold of. This is available in America on Shout Factory.
I don't want to get hold of this, though. I don't want to.
And you could watch you could get hold of the dubbed version of it in the UK. On a 2006 release. Who was that from? That was from Metrodome. Yeah, I was still working at Videolog at this point, so I probably sent that image off to Amazon in the first place. I think because the subtitled is not available to us in England, we watched a different subtitled version which had got all the Japanese names still in it. So if we say the wrong names for your loyal Transformers fans who want the American names, that's the reason why. Having said that, I may struggle to remember any of the names. But that's okay. Gary gets to recap it, and he's watched it more recently than I have. This originally aired on April the 12th, 1988, when I would have been 12. How about you, Gary?
I would have not yet been 8. I would have been 7. So this would have been peak Transformers fandom for me, or close to peak.
And were you around yet, Anthony?
Yeah, I think I'm like 7 months, six months, thereabouts. No, yeah. 5 months, 5 months.
Just stick him in the baby walker, wheel him in front of the telly. Yeah.
I'd have cried my eyes out with this. Really upset me.
Okay, so Transformers is Transformers. I'm not going to go into what Transformers is. However, Transformers Super God Master Force, on the other hand, is the second TV series in the Japanese-only continuation of the Transformers series, following on from the Scramble City OVA and the Headmasters series that had aired in 1987. Transformers Super God Master Force followed those two things in 1988, and it was produced by Toei and broadcast on Nippon TV. And it follows the adventures of the Pretenders, who are robots in disguise. In disguises! They've got doubled down on the disguises. Later on, the series will introduce Godmasters. But not in this episode. The series was followed by Transformers Victory and the OVA Transformers Zone. And once that was over, they kept on bringing back the Transformers over and over again, even though that story was over. It would be Beast Wars next, and then a whole bunch of other Transformers. I think the only Transformers I've checked in on since was the Transformers Animated. That was the only series I watched. Was that mid-2000s, I think? Or maybe late-2000s, Transformers Animated? But what could have we watched in the UK instead of Transformers? Oh, I forgot to do that slide. Yeah, that's what all the other shows looked like. You could watch on the BBC. So I think this was a weekday we were on, and it would also be during the Easter holidays. What day are we on? We are on Tuesdays. You could watch Come Midnight Monday, a Australian drama about a train.
I would have said I've definitely never seen this, but I'm looking at pictures now, and I think I have.
You see,
obviously not then, but
you'd think I would have seen it, and I was looking at it, and I was like, no memory of this whatsoever.
That's strange. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it may have been repeated multiple times since then, because I think it was getting long in the tooth. It was 1982. It was in Australia.
Oh, right.
That was followed by Why Don't You? The
turn off your TV set and go do something else instead.
Exactly.
Is that what I used to say?
That was the lyrics to the song, and you're like, it was a bit kind of a bit ironic at the time when you think that, you know, you're watching a TV show that's telling you not to watch a TV show.
Yes, but I feel like that's also the point. That's to make kids' brains go,
I felt like this was the street smart Blue Peter.
Well, this is where PJ and Duncan got their break before they were PJ and Duncan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Then it was followed by The Littlest Hobo.
Awesome show. Best themes. I used to watch that. I kid you not, I used to watch The Littlest Hobo as a kid. Bearing in mind, I was one of those kids that didn't watch a lot of non-cartoons. The Littlest Hobo was absolutely, along with action TV shows, it was the exception to the rule. I loved that show.
Then you had Play School. Probably too old, both of us, for watching this.
Yeah, I might have had that on.
Oh, yes, you might have had that on. I see it was also followed by Gran, the stop-motion animation. Then, in the first thing you had on the afternoon schools program, not schools programs, children's programs. Before that, it's before the children's program, it's Bellamy's Seaside Safari, which I could not find any pictures of. Instead, I found David Bellamy's single that he put out in the same year. which I had not realised he'd put out a record, called Some Things Must Change.
That's a threat.
I bet that's a corker. I wonder if it's still relevant now. I bet it is.
It probably is, yes. I do remember Bellamy's Seaside Safari. I believe he would shrink and...
What? He would I thought it was a documentary kind of thing. Not a...
It is documentary, yes. It's a load of footage of tiny seaside creatures of from the British seaside. But in order to present it, he'd be like green screened in front of it, shrunken.
Oh, that's cool.
That's all coming back to me now. That's followed by proper staff children's BBC, Sebastian the Incredible Drawing Dog. A show which I was like, I do not remember this. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, yes, I remember this.
I'm going to have to look it up because I honestly don't remember that. Looking at the picture.
It's Michael Barrymore and a talking dog who can draw. And one puppeteer is doing the talking and of the dog, but then the drawing are the hands of the creator of the show, who's a cartoonist.
Oh, all right.
That was followed by something called Doodle, which I can find no trace of at all. But according to this, Doodle finds out how children at Tootle Drive School in Salford design their own t-shirts. And as usual, introduces cartoon fun. Okay, so it may just be like a
magazine?
Yeah, like a magazine program, but also like using up some of the like Warner Brothers cartoons or something that they might have at hand. Like I say, no trace of that whatsoever, and I have no memory of it whatsoever. I do have memory of this, though. Johnny Briggs. Loved this show as a kid. I think probably because the kid playing Johnny Briggs is exactly my age. So it felt like, finally, a drama for me. And it's not really drama, it's like a comedy. But it's like a kitchen sink comedy. It's a show which looks like what your life looked like when you were a kid in 1988. Though probably earlier than this, because I see this is a repeat.
Johnny Briggs.
I didn't used to watch Johnny Briggs. That did fall into the trap of, this doesn't look interesting, it's not a cartoon.
Then that's followed by, it was followed by Know How, but that's another show I could find no trace of. That's another Johnny Bull show. Apparently it had some sort of sci-fi setting. They're on the Hyperspace Hotel. Then yeah, news round, then Degrassi Junior High. So I've mentioned before not being allowed to watch Grange Hill. I believe that went double for Degrassi Junior High.
Why were there the wrong'uns or
wrong'uns?
I think it was like even more topical than Grange Hill would be.
Oh, right.
I don't even remember this.
It was the follow-up from The Kids of Degrassi Street. It's a Canadian thing. It's gone on and on. It was Degrassi High, and then there's been like two sequels after that. Drake was in one of them.
Okay.
I think I'd seen just enough so that when I watched the Kroll show and they have a parody of it called Wheels Ontario.
Yeah.
that I was able to get that. But I would not have watched. I don't think even if I wanted to watch it, I would have been allowed to, but I don't think I wanted to watch it in the first place. Because I would have thought it was too American, even though it's Canadian.
It's true, though, what you're saying, you know, when you're especially that age, it's like, wow.
But yeah, looking at that and the Wide Awake Club, though, it does kind of put... I see people, like, thinking that all these, like, bright colours and, like, fluorescent colours are 90s colours just because they remember it from Saved by the Bell. Yeah, it's really late 80s is where it started, or mid to late 80s. Then, in the evening, there was the sitcom Three Up, Two Down, which I believe the sit of that com was that the parents of a couple with their baby move into the downstairs flat below them, and they don't get on. So it's like the dad of one and the mum of the other, like, and one's common and one's posh. Let the friction fly. ITV, you'd have had Rainbow.
Definitely watched that.
Followed by Moomins.
Yay. And that.
Followed by Who's Next? Now, this is a thing I had to go on a right old trail for. So the only
Don't even remember that.
No, I didn't. But when I heard the theme tune, which I heard on a podcast discussing how nobody remembers this show.
they were right.
Yeah, so there's a mention of it on TV Cream. And I think it was a podcast by two people who write for TV Cream. And they played the theme tune, and all of a sudden, it all came flooding back to me. And then they described it, and I was like, not only do I remember the theme tune, I love this show.
What is it? Tell us more about it.
It's basically Vox Pops for kids. They just take a camera out on the street, and kids would just go in front of the camera and do what the hell they liked. And then presumably they edited out the maniacs and just put the good stuff on. But yeah, I think it was a Proustian rush when I heard that themed song. Yeah, let me see if I can find which podcast it was to give them a proper shout out. Who's Next podcast? Because that's where I found that logo from.
Yeah, like I'm looking at the run and I'm thinking, I watched all of these, including what comes after. But I'm like, how do I not remember that one?
No, I can't find it at the moment. I'll stick it in the links because it'll be in my history. Then we've got Inspector Gadget. Yeah.
Go, Gadget, go.
So maybe that's why I didn't know about Know How, because I was busy watching Inspector Gadget. Bellamy's Bugle. He's on both channels, BBC and ITV.
Everywhere.
Cleaning up.
Is he getting shrunk in this one?
I don't have any recollections of this one, but there are entire episodes of this on YouTube. If so, if you want to find out more about Bellamy's Bugle, it's on there. It's got an amazing computer-generated opening. Very of its time. Then you also had Connections, a quiz show, look, I guess for children, because it looks like there's a whole load of school children behind the presenter.
I was going to say, that is a jumper.
That is a jumper. For those who are listening to the podcast, it's like a white jumper with multicoloured zigzags all over it.
It is proper BBC presenter from the 80s, early 90s. Jumper.
I have no recollection of this. I also have no recollection of the later quiz show, Headliners, that's the board game that image is, presented by Derek Jameson, the newspaper journalist who became a TV personality in the 80s. His catchphrase.
What's the quiz involved? Do you just fill in the headline
it's
with the word?
Just, I think it's it was quizzing you on 50 years of newspaper headlines, I think.
Have I got news for you before? Have I got news for you?
But I think serious quiz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. His catchphrase was, "Do they mean me? They surely do."
What does that mean?
I don't know.
When would he say that in relation to anything?
And then you had Alf Weezer saying pet.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. People from your neck of the woods, or at least some of them are.
Yeah, very well-loved show.
And the UK number one is I Think We're Alone Now by Tiffany.
Great song.
Awesome. Yeah. Great song.
This was a reminder of, like, I was like, oh, this is why I cut it off at 11. Because when we do, like, things from Gary's period of time or from, like, 88 and 89, I realised, oh, no, I'd be picking stuff. I'd be thinking in the mind of a 13-year-old boy. A terribly horny 13-year-old boy. Surrounded by just other horny 13-year-old boys discussing who fancied more, Tiffany or Debbie Gibson. And I was like, yeah, 11 years old is the right cutoff. So, episode one of Transformers Super God Master Force is Rise Up, Pretenders. It's directed by Tetsuo Imazawa, who also worked on Candy Candy, Kaniku Man, and God Mars. Screenplay is by Hiroyuki Hoshiyama, writer of pretty much at least one thing every time you do one of these episodes. character designer is by Ban Megami, also did Transformers, The Headmasters. Chief Animation Director is Joji Oshima, who also worked on Get a Robo Go. And our cast is Katsuji Mori as Hawk / Metal Hawk. You may know him as the voice of Ken the Eagle from Gatchaman, Garma Zabi from Gundam, or Jean-Pierre Polnareff from the OVA version of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Lovely.
And our youthful lead character is Go Shooter, played by Yumi Tuuma, who we've run across as Yui Hongo in Fushigi Yugi. Gary and me have run across as Sophiel in Slayers. And she also plays the voice of the older of the Pichu brothers in the Pichu brothers shorts from the Pokemon movies. The opening theme is Chojin Master Thors No Theme by Toshiya Igarashi. And the ending theme is Morio Transformer by Toshiya Igarashi, who also did the Machine Robo, the Running Battle Hackers opening theme, which is the greatest opening theme of all time. I can't remember if that's available in English, so if someone could pick that at some point. I know the theme is the highlight of that show. The rest of the episode is terrible. Gary, tell us what happened in episode one of this, called Rise Up Pretenders.
So, like, thank you for your explanation of the chronology, because that was the one thing I hadn't actually looked up. I suspected, knowing that it was a Japanese-only series, that it was taking place after at least the American shows.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure where it fits in the timeline.
I believe that Scramble City replaces the last few episodes of the American series to run into this continuity.
Yeah, because the American series, all but as from my memory, ends with the Headmasters. But I don't think it was a full series. It was like a three-part, two-part. But the interesting thing with it was, so you're watching it, and the premise is that at this point in time when this show starts, Transformers aren't a thing. So I don't know how that's explained, but basically you start off with a scene of a cruise ship, and it's just people enjoying their cruise. And then all of a sudden, monsters start coming out of the water and attacking the ship. I'm not really sure what they're supposed to be doing. There's one of them that's just sort of a scene where you see one of them running through a crowd, just sort of palming people out of the way. I want to say that's Gulf, or at least that's the name you're given, because as each of the Decepticons, or Destrons if you're a Japanese purist, as each of them appears, you do get a little sort of pop-up down the bottom telling you their name. So you're introduced to Blood, Gulf, Gilma, initially, and then later on you're introduced to more. But they basically start off by terrorizing this cruise ship. The next thing you see is a scene where Shooter's playing football, and there's two people in the crowd, and I can't remember why they've got a vested interest in him, but one of them is Hawk, and they're explaining how good Shooter is, and they are discussing the fact that there's been an attack. So you're taken to a scene where they're discussing the attack, and Shooter happens to walk in, and they decide to tell Shooter about the attack because he might be affected by it. And they then explain that the Transformers crashed on Earth. Did they say thousands of years ago? Thousands of years ago. And the Decepticons and the Autobots, or Cybertrons as they're being called in the Japanese version, had been warring, and somehow the Autobots had managed to bury the Decepticons deep underground, and they had not been active until now. Now they have suddenly stirred. And they explained that because the Autobots love humanity, they have decided to disguise themselves as humans. But because the Decepticons do not, they decided to disguise themselves as demons. So at this point, Hawk reveals to Shooter that he's actually a robot, and you get to see Hawk transform from a human into a robot. And he suddenly grows in size because, you know, that's what Transformers do in the cartoons. So you've then basically got a scene where the Decepticons, having terrorized the cruise ship, are now terrorizing downtown. Again, I don't think they actually explain what their motives are initially. They're just attacking. Later on, they do, because at this point, you're then introduced to a couple more. So you're introduced to Tentakill, that's a giant sort of squid-like.
Best name in this episode.
Yeah, Tentakill is the best name. You've got Tentakill, you're then introduced to Dalros. You're not really sure who's in charge. In fact, there's a bit of a discussion about whether Dalros is in charge or whether Blood is in charge. Hawk, meanwhile, puts out a broadcast telling all of the other pretender Autobots, these are Autobots disguised as humans, that they should assemble. So one by one, you're given this intro sequence where each of the Autobots who's in human form gets a little alarm go off on their watch and then suddenly has to run off and transform. Except for one of them, the pretender that is known as Lander, he is on a date at the time he gets the call, but he immediately transforms into robot form in front of his date and then just legs it. And she's just sat there stunned, which I think is probably the funniest bit.
Well, he doesn't transform into robot form. He transforms into his armoured form. And then when he runs out of the street, then he transforms. Because this is the thing about these pretenders. They've got far too many forms.
Yes, they have.
Because they have to have a form which looks like the toy.
Yeah. Because they've got their, obviously they've got their human form that doesn't look like a robot whatsoever. They've got a kind of armored form. You've got a robot form.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got a robot form. You've got a vehicle form, but some of them have more than one vehicle form. So one of them called Diver, who's seen, I assume, an aquarium because you see dolphins. He turns into an underwater kind of submarine type device, but then later on he turns into a jet and flies in the air as well. So they are introduced to the pretenders, the Autobot pretenders you're introduced to. You've got Hawk, who's obviously the kind of de facto the first one that calls the others. You've got Diver. Lander is the one I mentioned on a date that turns into a car. And then you're also introduced to Phoenix, who turns into a jet. So they arrive at the scene in the city. And basically, at this point in time, it's pretty much just Tentakill that's on a rampage. And in fact, I made a note that the when the Autobots turn up to fight, and you hear the Decepticons discuss the fact that the fight was deliberate, and the purpose of the fight was to draw out the Autobots, they decide to let Tentakill see how well he fares against the Autobots. So they don't even step in and help at this point. They just leave Tentakill, although I think there's possibly two of them, to fight Hawk and the Autobots. There's a scene during the fight where you think Hawk's going to do well, except for the fact that Shooter pulls a hot rod, for those who are familiar with the Transformers movie, gets himself in the way, which prompts Tentakill to grab him, and then Tentakill to shoot Hawk. Tentakill takes... it is Tentakill that takes Shooter hostage.
It is, yeah. He's got the tentacles to do it.
Yeah, he takes Shooter hostage. At this point, they're asking Hawk to lower his weapon. Thankfully, the person that's got the gun pointing at Hawk doesn't realise that one of the other Autobot pretenders is behind him. I think it's Diver, could be Phoenix. They then disarm him with a punch, which prompts Hawk to then rescue Shooter. And at this point, the Decepticons, seeing that the Autobots have recovered Shooter and are starting to gain the upper hand, transform and flee. And they also have multiple forms because, for the most part, they've been in their monster form and then their human form. And then after they start losing their fight when they're all in human form fighting with swords, they then turn into, like, I think they turn into, like, jets and fly off?
I think so, maybe jets, yeah. I mean, so, that's the Decepticon way.
Yeah, that is the Decepticon. Everyone can turn into a jet if they want. So at this point, you've then basically got the Autobots explaining that, you know, they're now going to have to kind of sort of battle the Decepticons, and they want to bring peace to Earth because they like Earth and it's their home. Sort of cue the Hallmark moment. That's kind of it. I don't know if I missed anything there.
No, I think that's pretty much it. It's it's rubbish.
I was just going to say, as somebody who is a big Transformers fan, both as a kid in the 80s and somebody who still likes it now, partially for the nostalgia, I didn't enjoy this that much. It was the Pretenders weren't anywhere near as charismatic, and they're I know that's
even,
difficult.
Because... They're not even the main characters. I don't think the main characters show up till like way into the series.
Yeah, because obviously the intro is getting you hyped because you're seeing the likes of Optimus Prime and like the almost like the evolution of the likes of Jazz, etc., and like their kind of future counterparts. But none of those characters turn up in this. You've got the Pretenders, but none of them seem that charismatic compared to what you're used to as a fan of the original Generation 1. And the other thing I was hoping is, from what I can gather, and again, I'm not an expert on this, so people listening don't quote me on this. From what I gather, again, based on watching the intro, I believe that that Blood Gulf, Gilmer, etc., are all part of the Seacons that can form into Piranha Kong.
Yeah,
and I was hoping if we could see Piranha Kong, that might save this. But again, that's in the intro. There's no sign of Piranha Kong here. Whether that's a thing they can do later, I don't know. But yeah, the intro, like, you know, has the usual suspects like Optimus Prime, etc., in it, and none of them are here, and you're just left with basically sidekick Transformers fighting sidekick Decepticons.
Yeah, one of the Pretenders looks like Wolverine. There is that.
Yes, he does.
I think that's Phoenix looks like Wolverine. And of course, there is the issue that Landa appears to go around having sex with human women.
Yeah, there is that.
Oh, gosh. I don't know quite how long that's been going on for. Thousands of years, by the sounds of things, based on what they explained.
Yeah.
Because he's really annoyed that his date's been interrupted.
But I think, considering it's set after the G1 series, but they kind of make mention of the fact that all the Transformers have been underground. So I'm sort of thinking, well, does that mean the events of, like, you know, Optimus and co. meeting the likes of Spike and Sparkplug and Carly, has that not happened? Has it been forgotten about? Because the humans in the show don't seem to know that Transformers are a thing.
No, I think there's an issue as well. I think there's something like the Headmasters series seem to be set in the future. This takes place after that, but no longer seems to be set in the future. That was clearly set in the future based on the descriptions that everyone's giving. But as I say, the main character I don't think shows up for ages. I think the main thing is the people becoming like the God Force. Transformers, which I think are like humans who turn into Transformers, or wear Transformers as armor. I can't remember exactly how it works. And then the armor eventually becomes sentient at the end. I think all the kids might also become headmasters. Something ridiculous and daft, but
yeah, it was a weird one.
My Transformers fandom was always strictly the UK comics. that was it. I was always disappointed when I got the Transformers comic and it was clearly the American comic and not the British comic. And I never really took to any of the cartoons at the time.
I'm so lukewarm on Transformers in general. So the fact that this wasn't great.
And the Pretenders toys always struck me as lame. Because it was like they were like a, weren't they just like a solid plastic shell with no articulation as the Pretender part, and it would pop open and there'd be a robot inside, and you're like, hey, is that a tiny robot or a giant man that they've emerged from?
I don't even remember the Pretenders toys. I had a couple of the Seacons though, because you could get the toy of Piranha Kong. And actually form him together. And like all the combiner toys, they were always really good. But yeah, the Autobot Pretenders, I don't think I had any of the toys of those. But their designs, even in the show, didn't seem that interesting.
Yeah.
Although I'm intrigued by the fact that they start off as a human and then a little robot pops out. That does sound quite amusing. But yeah, I was at the time a huge Transformers fan. Back, you know, Generation 1 cartoon is what I was raised on. And I watched this and I was like, this is not my cup of tea. Like, I'm trying to draw a sort of line in the sand and think, no rose-tinted specs. What year are we talking? This was late 87? 88.
Yeah,
this came out. Yeah, so April 88. 7-year-old. Yeah, I kind of think 7-year-old me would have probably watched this if it was on, because it was on and because it was Transformers. But they wouldn't have liked it as much as Generation 1, because if the toys aren't cool, then that cheapens the cartoon. It's the same reason I didn't like GoBots.
I think I like GoBots, but then I'm the right age to have encountered GoBots first before Transformers. And then once you see Transformers, then you're like, put aside those GoBots. Don't need them anymore. But
yep.
If you live in a world without Transformers and you meet Robo Machines, then you're like,
yeah,
wow, my tiny mind has been blown. It's a car and a robot. Next up, we've got not Lens Man. What's that still doing in here?
I saw that in the note. I was like, I don't want to say anything. Things sneaking in.
This is entirely the. Have I uploaded the? What the hell's happened here? Okay.
Something you just carried on from.
I made all the other slides. So I don't know why they're not in this file.
Wow.
That means the listeners are currently getting confused.
That is very stupid, because I'm looking at the correct slides right in front of me. Okay, I just have to do without slides as normal.
It's fine.
How is that not saved? Righty-ho, I'll at least rewind it back to the appropriate
slide. We need to Google what the number one is.
The annoying thing is I've got the right slides in front of me on my computer, which is why I don't know how they've not ended up on this other computer. Oh, dearie me. Ignore this, listener. This is technical problems. Goldran.
Yeah.
So, we've covered the Brave series here before with Jay Decker and Mike Gynor. And Goldran is the sixth of the Brave series. And once again, it's produced by Sunrise and airing on TV Asahi. And the story follows the adventures of 3 12-year-old boys and their robot chums as they battle the plans of Prince Walter Wolzak of the Wolzak Kingdom. And it originally aired at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on the 4th of February, 1995.
God, imagine getting in from school and getting this. You're in for a treat.
Okay, so what were you watching instead, Anthony? Well, this is what you're watching. I can't show you if you're on Twitch, but you can listen to my beautiful voice.
Yeah, he's telling the truth.
As I tell you, you could have been watching Pingu.
I feel like I probably would have been at some point. I've always liked Pingu.
Wait, what year are we again?
1995, so I would have been 19 at this point.
I'd have been 14 and probably still enjoying Pingu.
I was definitely 11 to meet the criteria and rules of this podcast. Yeah.
So this is Saturday.
Definitely
so
not 8 years old.
You would not have been getting home from school either, because it was a Saturday. That was followed by something called Look Sharp.
Is that Pat Sharp involved there?
An observation quiz for younger children presented by Chris Jarvis.
Yeah. They missed a trick.
They did miss
Pat
a trick.
Sharp on that.
Yeah. Owlbear the Fist Musketeer.
Good stuff.
Chuckle Vision.
Brilliant stuff.
Apparently in this episode, Paul and Barry's electricity bill gives them a shock, so they decide to invent alternative methods of generating power. I might have to watch that.
Sounds like an episode of Bottom.
I was going to say, I might have to get some hints on that from working at home. Let's see what my electricity bill's like. Then you've got The Raccoons.
Classic.
Yeah.
Live and Kicking with Andy Peters and Emma Forbes. Who have they got on here? They've got Cyndi Lauper and breakfast television fitness expert Mr. Motivator.
Oh, I loved Mr. Motivator.
Nice.
He was hilarious.
This sounds like compulsory viewing for anyone who was alive in that era.
They've got Rugrats.
On a Saturday.
They've got X-Men. They've got Clarissa Explains It All. John Barrowman has your showbiz news and reviews. And Trevor and Simon are in the dry cleaners.
Trevor and who?
Trevor and Simon.
Who were they?
They were their comedy people they had on doing the sketches and things. And their dry cleaner character's catchphrase was, "We don't do duvets." which my mum enjoyed because she used to work at a dry cleaner's, possibly at this time she was working at a dry cleaner's. That's a very accurate thing. They don't do duvets. Then you'd have, obviously, grandstand, and then in the evening we had cartoon. Don't know what cartoon that is. Big break. I don't know, one of Anthony's favourites.
Well, we always talk about the intro.
We always talk about how neither of us know what the actual lyrics were to the song.
Oh, it's a big break. No, I don't either.
Then Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
Was that the cartoon or was that the
live action?
I
don't think
it's always confused.
I don't think it's ever been a cartoon. It's live action. This is the
thing. There's been Indiana Jones cartoons, hasn't there?
I don't think so.
Sure there has.
There's lots of cartoons. Are you thinking of Montana Jones or whatever it was called we watched?
God, it all blurs, I swear. No, it's not.
Are you thinking of DuckTales?
No.
Yeah. I had an Indiana Jones film.
There's lots of cartoons ripping off Indiana Jones, but I'm pretty sure there's no Indiana Jones cartoon.
There should have been.
We had Mysterious Cities of Gold. We were covered.
I feel like if they'd made one, it would have been terrible, particularly in the 90s.
But it would have been good at the time for kids, because it'd be like, oh, this is Indiana Jones. Doesn't matter how bad it is when you're a kid. This is Indiana Jones.
I don't think people liked the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, to be honest.
I definitely didn't.
No, I didn't either.
And considering I would, as a 14-year-old, would still happily sit and watch Chucklevision, I still didn't like it.
Then you got Noel's House Party. Michael Elphick, star of Three Up, Two Down, is among the guests. And Judith Chalmers receives a gotcha. And your chance to grab... There's a chance to grab a grand. Number Cruncher may turn up in your town. And another cheeky child tells all in Wait Till You Get Home. Oh, and NTV as well, when they invaded your front room.
I love seeing stuff like that happen, actually.
I mean, I think it had worn out its welcome by 95 for me.
And it's still a thing now. I'm sure Michael McIntyre does it every Saturday, or at least when his show's on TV.
Ads and Denk used to do it as well on their thing as well.
Yeah.
When did it run? Between 91 and 99, Noel's House Party.
I was never a massive fan of it. I don't know what I watched instead, but
I can't tell you either.
Playing video games.
Unfortunately, the time scans on archive.org, this times on the Saturday they've got scanned has no TV listings, so I've no idea what's on ITV at this point. But I can tell you that the UK number one is "Think Twice" by Celine Dion.
Not sure I know that one.
I don't know it either.
That was like number one for like that entire year, I'm sure.
That was the Titanic one.
Oh, you know, but I'm pretty sure like the Celine Dion one felt like it was at that Celine Dion one felt like it was number one forever. Because I think Twice was like, I don't know if it was her debut, but I think it was the first Celine Dion song I heard. Like, put her on everyone's radar, I guess.
Let's have a look how we did in the charts. UK charts. Only came in 34 in the year-end charts in the UK, so it couldn't have been number one for very long.
Or maybe I just hated it because my sister liked it. It's true.
It knocked Cotton Eye Joe by Rednecks off the number one spot.
There you go. That's why I hated it.
I bought Cotton Eye Joe on single.
I bought Cotton Eye Joe on single. I did not buy Celine Dion on single. I had impeccable taste as a 14-year-old.
Okay, yeah, so how long was it at number one? We'll find out in a second. It was in the charts for 16 weeks.
There you go. It's like 3 months. Wait,
it was
4 months.
Oh, it was number one for 7 weeks. You're right, Gary, it was number one for a long time. Bloody
see?
Hell. And I have no recollection
Gary was
of
a
it.
Fan.
Yeah,
no
it was like, it was the drought after the glory of Cotton Eye Joe. It was nasty. It was not a good era. For music, or not a good period for music. UK.
So, episode one of Goldran is called Arise, Brave of Gold. So, copying very much the formula of Rise Up Pretenders. I'm going to guess a lot of these robot shows have similar titles for their first episode. Our director is Shinji Takamatsu again, from J-Decker, Might Gainer, Gintama, and Cute High Earth Defense Club. Screenplay is by Hiroyuki Kawasaki, from J-Decker, and also Sorcerer Hunters from around this same time. Character design and animation director is Hiratoshi Takaya, who we recently met on Hakugai, Legend of Moby Dick. And mechanical design is by Kurio Okawara of All Things Robots. And our cast are the red short one, Takuya Harashima, is played by Obi Minami, who would play Tama in Gintama. The tall blue one is Kazuki Tokimura, played by Shiaki Morita, who voiced Tokio in Flint the Time Detective. Dai Suganuma, the other one, is played by Kosuke Okano, who we recently heard voicing Rekka Hanabishi in Flame of Rekka. And the villain, Walter Walczak, is played by Toshiyuki Morikawa, the voice of Isaburo Sasaki in Gintama, both Enil and Hachan in One Piece, and the voice of Leon S. Kennedy in Resident Evil games.
Cool.
And our opening theme, or in this case, the ending theme, but normally it's the opening theme, Bokura No Adventure by Amy, somebody I can find no information on. They are one of these one-and-done-uns, I think, as far as I can tell. So, Anthony, tell us what happens in episode one of Goldran, Arise, Brave of Gold.
I'll certainly give it a shot, and I preface this by saying I had problems remembering the names of the characters as well, so seeing blue and tall and the other one is going to come in handy. So the episode opens with a big golden Godzilla dinosaur-looking mech that's about to be captured by humans, or at least they're trying, and it's proven troublesome, and it's destroying all their efforts. They're using like little ships with big grappling hooks kind of thing to try and kind of tie it up and restrain it. And it just breaks out easily and destroys all these ships. And we cut to three kids, which Takuya, which we mentioned, and the other two. Because I don't even think they got introduced properly, really. Unless I must have missed it. But they're having fun, and they've created a super sled. No, sorry, what's it called? Like the super great big extra sled.
Yes.
It's like a bobsleigh.
Yeah, they're very careful, right, actually, to say each other's names in the very first scene that they appear.
Do they really?
Yes.
God, I must have watched past that, which is a shame because I was quite enamored with it all, to be honest. But anyway, and they're just hurtling down this hill. They're all in it, and they're like breaking into buildings through the village and crashing into it. Ends in a chicken coop, and they're actually headed to school at this point. So they get talking to by their teacher, who, for a second, I thought was another pupil in the class because I don't think she looks any older than them, or at least she didn't feel that old. So I was like, oh, well, she is a teacher, but as she's revealed. And she's like, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. Like, look at your talents. You can apply this to better things. And she picks them all out. So Dai, he says, like, oh, you're strong. You can apply that elsewhere. And Kazuki, you're clever. You're intelligent. But Takuya, you've got no skills, unfortunately. And he runs out in the huff, and she's like, oh no, I didn't mean to upset him. And the other two follow him. But it was all just an act. It was all just an act to get them out of trouble, which I thought was quite good. And we go back to the military. So there's a lot of stuff back and forth here between the three kids and this military group controlled by the prince. So they're still trying to capture this mech, which for some reason, which I didn't catch, but it starts digging itself under the ground. And this old guy who's leading this army, he's informing the prince of their progress. It's where we see Prince Walter. Was it Walter Walczak? That's where we first meet him. And he says, oh, I'll do it myself. And he seems to recall this scripture from a legendary slab and it's to do with the greatest man on earth. And I'm trying to make notes at this point. I'm pausing it at different bits, and I'm sure some of this must have been lost on me. But essentially, if they go to the greatest man on earth, they will then achieve the powers of the Power Stone using an ancient sword to revive the Brave. So now he's at this ancient site, which is it's like a huge picture of a man, and there's like a monument, and it's all very, very ancient looking. And he goes there and he sees this ancient sword, which he pulls out the sword, and it causes the structure to collapse and crash down around them, and it causes this huge flash flood, and the flood clears, but we'll get to that shortly. So we then get back to the kids, who are digging up an old memory box that they buried 4 years ago, and they've each got like a bit of them in this box, so like a bit of them, like a kind of symbolizes their personality. And suddenly this red light starts emanating from the hole, and then it fades away. But Takia wants to continue digging to see where it is. Back to the prince and the collapsed structure where they were. It's now revealed a message, presumably where the water was, I suppose. And it says, look over there. Then we're back to Takia, and he finds this gemstone. That was the thing that was emanating this red light, and it's obviously the power stone that the prince is looking for. The prince flies overhead in this huge, it's kind of like a lobster, like a big red lobster ship.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's fucking Scorponok from Transformers.
I was going to say, they jacked Scorponok and painted him red.
Oh, well, there you go then. See, I told you I wasn't a Transformers guy. he flies overhead, and he demands that they hand over the power stone. It shouldn't be in the hands of kids. And the kids hear a voice from the stone to recite a spell. And they don't know what the spell is, so Takia basically fools the prince into revealing the spell. And he does this by saying, it's essentially just fooling them, like, you know how kids do, like, oh, you probably don't know what it's for anyway. And he's like, no, I do, I really do. And he's like, oh, well, what's the spell? And anyway, recites the spell. And the kids say the spell while holding the power stone, and it brings forth all these pillars from the ground, and it summons the golden swordsman Dran. And it's a huge mech with a sword, and essentially Takia is now his master to command him to do whatever he wants, and he sends him after the prince and his men, and he's destroying all all his underlings and these like weaker ships. And the prince shoots out of his ship this huge volley of missiles at Dran. And Dran summons the dinosaur from the beginning. I think it's a Galgon or Golgon. And essentially the two fuse together and they combine into Goldran. Huge gold knight, which I think looks awesome. And the cannons, they're doing absolutely nothing to him now. They're just not necessarily bouncing off him, but no effect. And he uses a special move to put an end to the prince, cutting his robot in half. And the prince then escapes in a little escape pod. Goldran reveals he has 7 allies who are all buried underground, and the prince overhears and he says, oh, I'll find the 7. And then he essentially shoots a big nuke at Goldran, or like a big missile from that scorpion ship that you mentioned. And then the credits roll. What could happen to... What could have happened?
Very short series.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. It's a one-off special. And to be honest, I'm interested to see the other 7. I don't know, I was really into this, and this is why I think I was struggling to take notes in a chronological order that made sense, and that's why I miss little details, you see, because when I'm quite thorough with notes sometimes. But I really enjoyed this. Everything about it looks great.
Yeah, I love it. Good.
I thought it was really, really good.
So was it a long running series, or was it only short then?
Oh, I forgot to say how long it ran for. It ran all year. It's a year long series.
Because I actually watched the credits, and then I watched like the preview for the next episode. So I was like, is the next episode going to show you one of the 7?
And I don't know.
It looks like it did, like just a still image, and I was like, yeah, this looks good. I totally would watch this. Well, I really enjoyed it.
This has fans. This the entire thing has been fan subbed. So if you want to watch all of it, you can. Of these things, I'd seen Anmitsu Hime and this first episode of this as well before. And yeah, going into this, I knew I liked both of them, but watching them again, I was like, yeah, it's so good. It's so ridiculously good. The comedy is so good. The fact the villain is an absolute goof and the heroes are absolute goofs. And I assume when we see more of the robots are going to be absolute goofs as well. It was highly enjoyable. Weirdly, like the three of them simultaneously, the kids remind me of the pilots from Get a Robo as if they were 12-year-olds, but also weirdly the girls from Keep Your Hands Off Aizuken as well. in terms of like character energies. They drive home repeatedly, like, this is the intelligent one, this is the strong one, and this is the guy who is our hero, but who's incredibly average, because that's the role of the hero in these stories, is to be, this could be you, dear viewer. You could find a giant robot friend.
Takuya seems pretty clever.
Yes,
like he's a good read of a character, or like, you know, he can manipulate.
They destroy so many people's houses at the start, though, when they're slaves.
Oh, it's crazy. They're the true villains of the show.
The thing that I made a note of here, and I'm glad Anthony corrected me, because I must have, I don't know if it was in the subtitles or if it was I just wrote it down wrong. I thought when they dug out the time capsule, they said they buried it for 14 years. And I'm sort of looking going, but how old are the kids in this show? Like, they don't look like they're 14 yet. So 4 years actually makes a lot more sense, mm-hmm. especially when you think of the tall one, I've forgotten her name, buried a notebook with loads of technical drawings. I was like, yeah, there's no way they did that when they were a kid.
Yeah.
Like a young kid.
8 years old. Did. Because this is a weird case where we've picked things which are all firmly aimed at the age we were imagining ourselves being at. Because Anthony's actually picked something which isn't late night anime for a change. It does make a change. And with these, because it's like all the leads are like around the age of the imagined audience, or like probably a little bit older. Just so you've got the idea of like, that's what it's going to be like when
I'll get
12.
There one day.
When I'm 12, I'll be a princess, or I'll be...
Yeah.
I'll be buddies with a giant robot, or I'll be buddies with a giant robot.
I did love the comedy elements were great. Like, even that bit when Takuya, once he's convinced the prince to tell him the spell, he's like, ha! I totally fooled you. And he's like, now watch this. And then he goes to recite the spell, but initially he can't remember the words. So they have to leg it while one of the other ones tells him what the words are. The comedy timing on it, I thought was really good.
I really like the character designs from everybody as well. It's like
they've got a good movement about them. Like, there's a lot of running and kind of scurrying around, especially with the prince and his cape, and it all looks nice.
Yeah, and as you say, this and Anmitsu Hime look so much better put next to that Master Force as well, because we really thing we didn't discuss about Master Force is just how terrible it looked.
Yeah, and
it's hard going
it.
All around, yeah.
I also, because it was my pick, I watched the Transformers one last, in my head thinking, I'll save the best for last, and I watched it, and I was like, wow, this is bad. Like, the other two were great, what happened here?
They're trying to do as little work as possible, I think, in the probably just because they needed the time. The robot scenes have got more action, but yeah, that football scene at the start is shocking. I was taken aback in Master Force when it opens with a scene of just an entire cruise liner of people getting killed by robots.
I think it was one of those things where I used to think, like, years ago, like, why did the Transformers shows stop bringing across the originals from Japan? Now I know why. They looked at this, they're like, we can't sell that. When Peter Cullen's not putting his name to that.
So the question now is, which one do we send back in time?
It's so easy.
Which one are you sending back, Gary, of the three? To an 8 to 11 year old self.
So it's not necessarily what's best.
But which one,
would I send back for me to watch?
Yes. When you were the appropriate age to watch them.
Oh, it would have to be Golden Brave of God.
Anthony?
You know what? It maybe was a bit of a harder pick because I do think Anmitsu was really good, but it's Goldran.
It's Goldran. Another day it'd be Anmitsu Hime, but between the two of them. Thank you. I think I would have watched Anmitsu Hime because I think the comedy stuff would have been like, I wouldn't have been like, ugh, girls. Because I know that's what got me past watching other things at that age. That I would have thought were for girls. But yeah, Goldran had got giant robots. And yeah, it was funny, which are two things I definitely would have enjoyed at the time.
Yeah. I would have wanted a model of them as well, because I'm really into like a gold armor. I think it looks really good, gold.
Let's see what there is available for the adult who has nostalgia for Goldran. Mm-hmm. It's probably they probably was something in the past and it's now sold out and it probably costs
a fortune. Unless they've done remakes of it like they do with the Transformers toys.
Yeah, nothing coming up on
I think that's the kicker, is if I had watched this as a kid, I would have wanted toys of it. And I suspect that much like, at least to my mind, when I watched things like when I saw Voltron on the children's channel, I don't think you could get Voltron toys in the UK. It was certainly not anywhere near as big as the likes of Transformers or even, dare I say it, GoBots. So, like, yeah, watching these shows but not being able to get the toys, that would have been the kicker. But, yeah, no, I'd have absolutely loved Goldran.
Yeah. For sure. I like it now and I was easier to please as a kid.
Yeah, no, I liked it now.
yeah, it doesn't look like there's anything currently available. So you'd be buying old stuff for extortionate prices. Get down to eBay with your hundreds of pounds. Yeah, I can see lots of their buddies, but I can't see the big fella himself. Related items, Baby Yoda. Okay.
No escape.
Righty ho. Before we go, Anthony, I told you I'd got a wheel.
Oh, yeah.
Of topics. Let's find out what we're going to do on the next podcast.
Is this streaming? Can I see this on Twitch?
You can't. No, not yet.
Oh. You mightn't even have a wheel audience. You may be pretending.
That's
He's
true.
Got a wheel.
I've got it. Of course, I've got a wheel. how do we paste list? There we go. Hang on. That's just pasting. That's not pasting the list. That's pasting the description of Anmitsu Hime.
Right. Anmitsu Hime it is.
Oh, come on. How on earth are you going slow? You're a bloody notepad program. There we go.
Where you send it? Is this going in Skype? Is it in?
No, this is, I'm just.
We don't need to know.
You don't need to know anything.
Oh, okay. I'm looking around everywhere for it.
But you can, because I haven't gone through it, you can boycott what, if you don't like the thing I get, I'll give it another spin.
Right, okay. I'm only going to do that once.
I was hoping we were going to get to have a look at what you could have won afterwards, where you tell us what else is on the wheel.
Oh, we'll get there. It'll happen.
Right, the wheel's spinning.
Don't need to tell you when to stop, or...
It has landed on Haikyuu. So we're finally going to do some more episodes of Haikyuu, Anthony.
From where, though?
From where we left it.
But I can't remember where that was.
We watched the first 13 episodes. So we'll watch, I don't know, 6 more episodes or whatever's a useful arc. Oh. Unless you don't want to watch Haikyuu. I'm sure you want to watch Haikyuu.
I do. Oh, I'm tempted to throw. No, we'll do it. We'll do it.
We'll do it.
We'll do it.
I say do like it. Having to find a guest as well, because it can just be me and Yi.
All right.
That'll be Haikyuu next week then. Righty, thank you very much for joining us, Gary. Anything you want to plug?
Yeah. No, you can find me on most gaming channels as Chidamaru, except on Twitter, and because that social media handle got stolen. And other than that, that's it. If you see me on the Xbox on Phantasy Star, say hi. I'm playing that a lot at the moment.
Anthony, anything you want to plug?
You're better off getting me on AntAskew on Twitter and AntAskew on Twitch as well. I'm looking at that Chidamaru account. They've got no followers. And they're not following anyone else themselves.
Wait, what's that one? On Twitch?
No, Twitter. I thought you said you didn't have it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't have the handle on Twitter. Yeah, the account on Twitter. I keep waiting to see if that name's going to get released.
Well, they've never they joined in March 2013 and they've never tweeted.
Yeah, I keep hoping that one day they do that whole thing where it's like, it's a dormant account, the name goes into the pool to be used again. And I can steal
Maybe
it.
They log in every day to seal it.
Yeah, they may just follow people. Do they follow people?
No, that's not a soul. Zero in each category.
You can follow me at awesome_engine on Twitter and at this and the Twitch channel we're currently broadcasting on, which is Let's Go Brian on Twitch. And who knows, one day there may be another anime convention, and if so, I may be at it doing some panels.
But for I might be attending.
In the meantime, let's not worry about it. Yeah. I'm not planning on doing any virtual cons because I like to have an audience that I can see and glare into the eyes of. Otherwise, we'll be back in next week, as we say, with Haikyuu. I'll go and figure out which episodes to watch. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.